I have wrestled with this gospel story. Not the immediate and obvious meaning, of course. We all know the owner of the vineyard in this parable is a sign of the Lord of all vineyards, of every mountain and valley, of all that lives and all that is. And his apparent largesse to the latecomers, to the least worthy, is a reminder of the utterly unmerited gift of redemption, which God lovingly bestows on all without regard for their personal effort or worth. And so, we today take the same clear message given to our forebears from this parable of Jesus, as it has been taught and preached and repeated down through the ages. None, not a single one of you, can earn or lay personal claim or right to the healing and transforming love of God, no matter how early in the morning of life, you entered the vineyard, no matter how hard you've worked through the heat of the day. And because this simple fact is so starkly true, there can be no jealousy or envy among you. The early risers must learn to be glad that the latecomers have made it. We must rejoice together that the Lord of creation, the master of the vineyard, has bestowed his love and bounteous redemption upon all, without counting their pathetic impotence to earn it. Let the Jews, therefore, give praise to God as they welcome their Gentile sisters and brothers among the chosen people. Let the saints embrace the sinners. Let those who have borne the burden of the day's heat stand up, weary but warmly welcoming to those who barely make it, who arrive, so to speak, at the 11th hour. Here, we might say, it's challenge enough for the worn and weary who have wrestled with the demons the whole day through. But sisters and brothers, this is only a first step for the followers of Jesus. Now, standing together as a people redeemed, we must probe together for the deeper meaning, the even greater challenge which lies hidden in this parable. The key, I believe, is in the seemingly proper, appropriate retort of the master, who says to the gripers and complainers, "I do you no injustice. You agreed on the usual wage, did you not?" Did they, indeed, agree on the usual wage? Did they really have a choice? And was the wage offered a just wage? For those who came at the first hour, was the compensation promised a fair return for a full day's work? Perhaps the scholars can help us to reach right answers to these challenging questions. In the Jerome Biblical Commentary, one of the universally recognized experts, Father John McKenzie, defines some terms for us in the light of historical and scriptural research. To hire laborers, employers looked in the marketplace of the city for unemployed men waiting there to be hired. Such men worked for as little as the employer was willing to pay. Denarius, the usual daily wage. A coin, the experts tell us, representing subsistence wages for the lowest level. Aha! Do you see it, sisters and brothers? In the real world then, as surely as today, the usual wage was not a figure founded in mutual respect and reverence for human dignity and the basic rights of all people, even the least and the last. It was what the market would bear. It was the lowest possible figure the lords and masters could possibly offer and still seduce the powerless laborers to give the sweat of their brows in return. In such a setting, it was small wonder, no wonder at all, that the first would grumble against the last, who were granted the same paltry sum for less sweat and shorter hours. And what a boon this is for the owners and the managers. For they have known in their worldly wisdom from time immemorial that the surest way to maintain an unjust arrangement is to set the workers at odds with one another. For whether they be mine workers or fishermen, working in the fields or the sweatshops, as long as they are kept busy plotting against one another to grab what little trickles down from the clenched hands of their employers, there will be no common force to confront the unjust stewards and owners with the full might of an oppressed and manipulated workforce. That, I do believe, is very much what Jesus is saying to us today. And if you ask me, as I suspect you might, if that's so, how come I never heard this homily before? How come every other preacher who ever took this text in hand and emoted before us was comfortable enough and satisfied his task was done when he simply told us to stop being jealous of one another, to have hearts of gold, and to simply be glad that people our common sense and right reason tells us haven't earned their share are nonetheless getting one equal to ours? How come it always stopped there? Well, if my theory, if you will, is valid, it's because we never took hold of that message and made it live. We are to this day still a jealous people, competing with one another. We have not accepted this extraordinary challenge of Jesus, which no one could accept except by God's grace. We have not accepted this challenge to love each other so much that we rejoice in each other's good fortune even when it's greater than ours. And it's only then, you see, really, it's only then, when we've reached that point, responded to that call, lived that kind of love, that our eyes will be more fully opened to see how we, together, loving and caring for and rejoicing mightily in each other's good fortune, only then can we be the kind of force that God intended to truly confront those with soiled hands who make the arrangements, who construct the systems that cheat us all. So, if you'd get to the deeper level of the parable, then today. Let its obvious message confront you square in the face. Take it on. Demand of yourself as Jesus demanded of himself that you love people without condition, that you stop counting other people's sins and keeping track of other people's efforts. Just be glad for the gift of life and the gift of love which God gave to you on no merit of your own and wants to give to all and through you with the strength that comes with that love. And if you and I become a people moved away beyond and above our sort of spontaneous and all too natural jealousies and envies of one another, if we become such a people, then at last, maybe, there will be some small hope at least that the poorest and most oppressed will find themselves living in a kingdom of justice and peace here on this earth, instead of being told again and again by pious preachers to be patient for the pie in the sky. In recent days, there have been numerous newspaper articles, radio reports of a phenomenon that far too few of us have noted or having noted have taken to heart. There is a controversy right now out in Silver Spring and Tacoma Park where employers arrive with pickup trucks looking for desperate, truly desperate migrants and refugees from other countries, longing for enough money to get food for their children. They pile them in the back of a truck. They take them off, extract all the sweat they can from a day's labor, and if possible, they pay them little or nothing, or at most, an unfair wage. And you can believe it. You know it in your heart that when the truck arrives, many a desperate refugee is willing to elbow aside a brother or sister in equal need. People become very basically selfish in settings like that. And that is, in quotation marks, one of the blessings which the employers and owners and managers always count upon. Set them against one another, and we can get on with business as usual. What's going on right now in South Africa? Do you know? Do you care? Do you struggle to understand this horrendous news that's coming? Poor black people of different tribes slaughtering one another in a context where apartheid, a denial of the very basic common unity God called us to, is still in so many ways in place? Did it take Nelson Mandela a few days ago speaking of the hidden hand for you to finally realize there's something more than tribal rivalry or old hostilities at work here? Don't you know the people in power have been doing this for generations, indeed, from the beginning of time? Set them against one another. Distract them in competition for the tidbits we allow to fall from our table. And they'll be too confused, divided, and preoccupied to confront together as a united people this essentially outrageously obscene arrangement of things for a whole country, where the latecomers not only get an equal share, but dominate over the early comers, the native people, parceling out to them the poorest land and the darkest places. I'm glad as I look back that I was among that feeble crowd down at the mall about 10 years ago. Wise enough to know that the deal being done on the air traffic controllers had implications far beyond the outcome for those, relatively speaking, well-paid federal workers. There was a kind of historical element present there that we all should have noted, should have called us in collective caution and concern to stand up and speak out, because when you strip any group of workers of their right to demand equitable arrangements, and you persuade their fellow workers at lower levels that it isn't all that bad, they're richer than you are after all. Well, if you can pull that off, you have helped to extend further into history this unjust arrangement, which we have simply recalled in today's gospel. Oh, I'll tell you something. If the poor, oppressed, jobless blacks in Miami and the rest of southern Florida had had the wisdom and the leadership not to object to and resent the coming of the even poorer and more pathetic Haitians, but if they had joined hands and forces to confront government and business powers united together, there'd be a lot less misery in Florida today. But as I've told you before, one of the greatest obstacles those poor Haitians who come in wretched little boats to Florida, one of the greatest obstacles they face is the jealousy and the fear of dispossession of what little they have on the part of black Americans. It's the way it works, and it's not an accident. It's all been planned. Today, we share with you in the bulletin the text of an article that tells you, at long last, the Roman Catholic Church has finally turned its attention to the question of the compensation it gives its own workers, secretaries, teachers, janitors, maintenance people. And they are challenging us who are in positions of authority, and sisters and brothers in the church of today, that includes you with me, for ours is a participating parish in which the leadership rests not only on the priests, but on the people. We are being challenged by the church to take a hard, cold look at the compensation we give to those who work for us and say, do you have the right to speak of justice out in the marketplace when you have taken advantage of the goodwill and piety of your own workers for generations? Something inevitable is happening here, dear friends. There are fewer and fewer nuns, fewer and fewer priests of religious orders who can survive comfortably on the modest pay we have offered in the past, and inevitably see the hand of God, if you will. Inevitably, more and more lay people will have to do these many ministries of the church. Let's face it together now, rather than be dragged to it later. We have no right to come here and hold this kind of celebration and praise the God of justice and love if we're cheating or taking advantage of the very people who have answered our call to help in our ministry. Hard words. Our income here has quadrupled the last few years. Now, will we accept the challenge to see if what we pay those who labor for us is just in every reasonable sense of the word, and if that means more income, will this parish accept that challenge? Some say Dinkins is right, and some say Dinkins is wrong. Some say he should have gone to the Korean market weeks ago. Some say he shouldn't have gone at all. But basically, somebody ought to do something. Somebody ought to grab all those blacks and Koreans by the shoulders and give them a good shaking and say, don't you see what you're doing? As long as you are fighting each other, as long as you are jealous of each other about who gets the little market on the corner, that those people who make the general arrangements and set the prices and are in control of the commerce can get on again and again, day after day, with their essentially unfair arrangements. In Texas and California, it's hard-working, long-standing fishermen
who have turned against their own sisters and brothers, refugees from Vietnam, seeking themselves to eke out a living at the sea. Their peers, their fellow fishermen, have turned upon them in animosity because they contend there aren't enough fish in the sea for us and for you. When in fact, if those Vietnamese and those long-standing Americans would reach out, take each other's hands, critique the systems, and challenge these arrangements, they might unleash a force that those in power who determine wages as they please would at last be forced, if not persuaded, to do justice. If you took your missal at home last week and you read these readings, the likelihood is great that you came today expecting to hear the usual homily. Sisters and brothers, don't be jealous of one another. Be loving and kind to your neighbor. Don't be nasty. Swallow it when it seems to you somebody else got a better deal for less effort. In the name of the Father and of the Son. Perhaps you think I dreamed this up. That I return then to say to you again, that Jesus may very well have meant to keep hidden from us the deepest meaning of this parable until we accepted that formidable challenge at the first level, to really love each other so much we're glad when some of us get better than the rest. And once that spirit, the spirit of the Lord, is alive and at work among us, then this loving community may be ready to stand together, hand in hand and arm in arm, to turn to our sisters and brothers who have positions of power and control of the wealth and say to them, no more. In answer to your question, dear owner of the vineyard, no, I didn't agree. I had no choice. My children were hungry. And you have done me and every other worker an injustice when you offered me less for a day's labor than would ensure my basic dignity, my essential God-given right to decent housing, to nourishing food, and yes, even to the quiet and the place where in leisure I and my family may recreate ourselves in the image of the Lord. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not so great a fool, I think I'm the first to notice this. Or, in fact, that I'm the first to preach it or challenge others to practice it. Actually, it's a very old wisdom. And it was summed up by some people who got wise and really understood the message of Jesus. And they put their common understanding into words. Some said, people united can never be defeated. And others said, we, not I for my own selfish interest, but we shall overcome.